Hi, it's Ruth McCauley returning with the second half hour of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, July 14th. We begin this half hour with some of the recent funeral notices that appear in the Decatur Herald and Review. Joan L. Risem, R-I-S-E-M, 88, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, July 8th, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Graveside services to celebrate Joan's life will be at 1:30 p.m. Thursday. Oh, that's today, so that's probably in progress or already concluded. Joan L. Risem is being served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home at 2091 North Oakland Avenue. Let's see, and that service was held at 1:30 today at Graceland Cemetery. Shalmar Pierre Evans, Shalimar, 30, of Decatur, departed this life on Saturday, July 9th. Services will be held at 12 noon on Saturday, July 19th, with visitation 1 hour before service at God's Place of Deliverance, located at 1110 East Curtis Avenue. Burial will take place at Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services have been entrusted to the Walker Funeral Service. From Assumption, Kylen, K-Y-L-E-N, Devon, William Fry, infant son of Kylie Miller and Demetrius Fry, was born into the arms of Jesus on July 12th. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, July 16th, in Sites Funeral Home in Assumption. Private graveside services will be held at a later time. Memorials may be made to Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep, photography for parents suffering the loss of a baby. The site's funeral home in Assumption has been entrusted with the care and service arrangements. Marie True Hare Diederich, 96, of Atwood, passed away on Monday, July 11th, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services are scheduled to be held at 10 a.m. Friday, at July 15th at the First Baptist Church, 231 North Illinois Street in Atwood, with Dr. Lanny Faulkner and the Reverend Ashley Schertz officiating. Visitation will be held this evening from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. That's Thursday, July 14th, and 1 hour prior to the services at the church. Graveside services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, July 16th, at the Pleasant Hill Cemetery in Cincinnati, Iowa. The Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home in Atwood is in charge of those arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorials are suggested to the retired ministers and missionaries offering of the American Baptist Churches USA, care of the First Baptist Church of Atwood. Some funerals that are pending for the area include Patty L. Collins, 81, of Decatur, who died on Wednesday, July 13th. That's just yesterday. The site's funeral home in Mohiqua, it will be in charge of those arrangements. Berdina May Pollen, 90, of Clinton, died on Tuesday, July 12th. The Moran and Goebel Funeral Home is in charge of those arrangements. And Donald E. Webb, 64, of Decatur, who died on Tuesday, July 12th. Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home is in charge of those arrangements. We turn now to the Decatur Herald and Review opinion section, and it's interesting. Their editorial today has taken the form of a note to our readers and is signed by Gary Sawyer, Herald and Review editor and general manager. And it says, "Dear readers, several of you have contacted us or made comments on social media about the headline in Tuesday's Herald and Review concerning the police shooting of a man in Decatur. We appreciate your comments and understand your concerns about how the headline portrayed the situation. While the headline was technically accurate, it placed too much emphasis on one aspect of the situation. One of our goals at the Herald and Review is to accurately report the stories that affect our community and to fairly portray what happens in the community. Our coverage of the Monday incident met those goals in many ways. Unfortunately, the headline did not fairly portray what happened in the community. For that, we apologize to our readers." Again, a letter to the readers, signed by Gary Sawyer, the Herald Review editor and general manager. You know, there are no other letters to the editor, nor editorials about the Decatur area. Let's go with what others are saying. "Make Social Security our safety net." This was an editorial that appeared in the Los Angeles Times. "The U.S. has entered an anxious era in which fewer workers have a single employer or a regular workplace. Instead, they have various employers and multiple part-time jobs and gigs, with these businesses not required to provide health care or make Social Security contributions. A crucial adaptation to these changing circumstances would be the creation of a portable safety net, one that would make it possible for all workers to go from employer to employer while still retaining access to basic benefits. Social Security could play a key role in such a system, but only if we fix it. Social Security is our most effective anti-poverty program. Without it, nearly half of the nation's retirees would be living in poverty. Three-fourths of retirees depend on it heavily, particularly women and racial minorities. The criticism that Social Security will face a financial deficit sometime in the 2030s is overblown. Social Security has an established trust fund that, legally speaking, cannot spend more than it takes in. Any future shortfall could be made up with any number of revenue sources. It's all a matter of budgetary priorities. In fact, the real problem with Social Security is not a shortfall, but that its payout is so meager. Social Security is designed to replace only about 35% of wages at retirement, yet most Americans need twice that amount to live decently. The obvious solution is to expand it. There are numerous revenue streams that would allow the nation to greatly increase the monthly payout for the 43 million Americans who receive retirement benefits. Here are a few recommendations to consider. First, we should eliminate the Social Security payroll cap so that all income levels pay the same rate. Currently, any wage income above $118,500 is not taxed for Social Security purposes. The practical effect of the cap is that billionaire bankers and CEOs contribute a far lower percentage of their income into the Social Security Trust Fund than their secretaries and chauffeurs. Making payroll contributions fairer would raise approximately $135 billion annually. In addition, we should stop exempting investment income from Social Security taxes. Wealthy Americans make 40 to 50% of their money from investment income, and we help fund Medicare by taxing it like wages. If we did the same for Social Security, we could raise an additional $75 billion annually. Along the same lines, we could scrap income tax shelters for wealthy households and businesses, then reallocate the savings to the Social Security Fund. Loopholes include the drastically lower tax rate for investment income like capital gains, carried interest, and step-up in basis, the latter exclusively benefiting inherited wealth. Boy, I hadn't even heard of that phrase personally, step up in basis. These tax rules cost the National Treasury hundreds of billions of dollars per year. Lastly, the U.S. could end or reduce tax breaks for private retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, and again reallocate the savings to Social Security, which would be far more equitable. Of the $165 billion that the federal government spends subsidizing individual retirement savings, nearly 80% of it goes to the top 20% of income earners. Many of the middle class and poor can't take advantage of these deductions because they don't earn enough income to save. Just these four revenue streams would come close to raising the $662 billion necessary to double Social Security's monthly benefit. Wow. Other nations manage to provide retirement benefits at that level, so there's no reason the U.S. can't. Doing so would create a more secure retirement for everyone, even as it would benefit the overall economy and form a core part of a portable safety net that so many workers need. As the old New Deal crumbles, substantial expansion of Social Security benefits would provide a new kind of deal for U.S. workers. Wow, interesting editorial from the editors of the Los Angeles Times. We turn back to the Tribune. We have a lengthy letter to the editor of the Tribune Online, signed by June Innes of Decatur. It carries the headline, House Speaker Michael Madigan and Honesty. Dear Editor, I read about Cindy Diedrich-Wolfer, who has been campaigning for state Republican representative against Sue Scherer, and that she announced that she was suspending her campaign. I know she will be disappointed, but didn't mention reasons in the paper about the decisions. Cindy is a very honest, hard worker and would be a great representative. I am sure that she will be, once again, helping to make Decatur a first-class city in which to live. This is my opportunity to talk about someone who is very unpopular. After thinking about it, I know I would not want to even be around Speaker Madigan and not want him to be my boss in any way, but those are my thoughts. He has been Speaker 33 years and tends to have everything his way. Does this remind anyone of another politician in America who is also a narcissistic leader? Madigan is a corrupt Speaker of the House, and here is an example of his "this will be my way" rule. I recently read that Senator Dave Siverson was working on the $75 million stopgap budget that will keep, it's got to be higher than that, don't you think, $75 million, that will keep road projects going, fund human services, and support higher education. But there was one holdup at the 11th hour, and that was the House Speaker wanting to increase over what they needed. Enter Madigan suggesting to give $400 million more, wow, where did that come from, for Chicago schools. This increase would suggest that every homeowner in Illinois outside of Chicago will pay higher property taxes. One of the corrupt things Madigan enjoys doing is getting a vote for a plan, any plan that he carries out, so the Democrats know how to vote. The procedure, I hear, is quite clever, but dictators are clever in getting their way, even nationally. The procedure is called shell bills. 1. The shell bill is read in each house 3 times on different days. 2. Just before the third reading of the bill, Tricky Madigan and his cohorts amend the entire bill. Then they read it a third time. A vote is called with little or no discussion by Madigan. 3. After amending the shell bill, it is passed by the Dems within an hour. No input to the representatives. What a life to live, working with a corrupt man, Speaker Michael Madigan. Does he even have a heart? I don't know Sue Scherer personally, but she is a nice lady. I am sorry to say that Speaker Madigan owns Sue Scherer. Dictators seem to do that. A letter to the editor of the Decatur Tribune from June Innes of Decatur. We're turning back to the front page of the Tribune Online, and we're going to pick up Paul Osborne's City Beat. And this column has the headline, This and That from Here and There. I watched a television newscast last week as a black mother living in a major city told a news reporter that she prays every day that her son will return home safely that evening. As a father, I can understand those feelings, and I believe most parents pray for their children, regardless of their circumstances or their age. If I was the father of a police officer, I would also pray every day that he or she would return home safely that evening. Black or white, policeman or citizen, it makes no difference. All have families who want them to return safely at the end of a day. Out of a population of 322.4 million people, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are going to be our major party choices for President of the United States. Wake me up. I must be sleeping, and this must be a nightmare. I'm thinking of having Sparky, Decatur's smartest squirrel, cover this race for the presidency. Sparky has a lot more experience in covering nutty things in the fall than I do. I've learned it really is true. Common sense in the nation's capital is uncommon. During the past week, I've had someone accuse me on Facebook of being a right-winger, and another person accuse me of being a part of the liberal media bias. Wow, no wonder I'm so busy all the time. Donald Trump has said a lot of things that needed to be said and were refreshing to hear. The only problem is that he also has said a lot of things that were wrong to say and repulsive to hear. Trump's actions and words are like a dog a homeowner buys to keep people out of his yard that also attacks the homeowner whenever he comes home. Obviously, some politicians today believe it is not wrong to lie to the American people if you are a politician, and then wonder why citizens have such a low respect for politicians. Don't you find it strange that we choose and retain many of our political leaders from people we wouldn't trust to handle any other part of our lives? The encouragement of a parent to a child is probably changing from when I was a kid. Today it is, just think, Susie or Paul, if you study hard, learn how to lie, cheat, make up your own rules and bully, you can someday grow up to be President of the United States. How do we cope with uncertain times and bleak predictions for the future? I guess I'm old-fashioned, but I believe that in uncertain times, we need to draw even closer to God, not push Him away. It's always worked for me. The next portion of his column carries the headline, Proud of the Decatur Community's Positive Actions on Monday. I'm proud of the way our community came together following the early Monday morning shooting of Lonnie D. Mitchell II, 40, a black man, by a white Decatur police officer. With everything that has been happening between black communities and the police in some major cities, this incident could have resulted in something ugly, but it did not. And that's because of the efforts of community leaders, including members of the black community, and the immediate action afterwards, the immediate action towards transparency by Interim Police Chief Jim Getz and other law enforcement officers. I attended part of the peace rally in front of the Macon County Courthouse Monday evening and was impressed with the overall attitude and love of those attending. There was a real spirit of togetherness that was evident and that didn't happen in one day because of the officer-involved shooting. It happened because of a growing closeness in our community between all of our citizens. Hats off to Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, NAACP President Dr. Janelle Norman, law enforcement officers, local pastors, and community leaders who are working together to make Decatur a better and safer place where everyone is treated with respect. We're not there yet, but we're on the right path. We're turning now back to the Decatur Herald and Review and picking up some of the brief local items listed in the local section. West Nile confirmed. The Macon County Health Department has received confirmation of the first mosquito batch testing positive for West Nile virus collected by the Macon Mosquito Abatement District. Adult samples were tested by the district. There are currently no human cases in Macon County and 2 human cases throughout Illinois as of July 11th. The abatement district daily is treating areas of standing water for mosquito larvae and surveying areas that might be overlooked for mosquito breeding. If you are aware of an area that has had standing water for 3 or more days, call the abatement district at 217-875-2722 so an investigation may be initiated. The health department also investigates West Nile virus in dead birds, which are fully intact and without decomposition or bugs. If a dead bird is found, call the health department at 217-423-6988, extension 1134. Residents in 12 central Illinois counties can dispose of unwanted agrochemicals for free through the Illinois Department of Agriculture's Clean Sweep program. The collection will take place in Coles, Douglas, Effingham, Moultrie, and Shelby counties, in addition to Clark, Crawford, Cumberland, Edgar, Jasper, Lawrence, and Richland counties. Participants must register the products to be disposed of by Friday, that's tomorrow, July 15th. Registration is required to prepare for the materials to be handled properly. Forms can be obtained by calling 1-800-641-3934. Volunteers are sought for nearly 2 miles of military-style and inflatable structures will turn Fairview Park into the Big Obstacle 3K, BO3K, on Saturday, July 23rd, but volunteers are needed to help out on the day of the event. Organizers will provide a t-shirt, lunch, and beverages to volunteers age 16 and older. Bring a lawn chair, bug spray, and sunscreen to the volunteer table at the main pavilion in Fairview Park at 8:30 a.m. Again, that's on Saturday, July 23rd. Proceeds from the event benefit the United Way of Decatur and Mid-Illinois. And the Garden Club of Decatur is having a bus trip to the Anderson Japanese Gardens in Rockford on Tuesday, August 16th. Okay, so this is down the road. Mark your calendars. The bus holds 55 people. The cost is $45, which includes cost of the bus, lunch, and admission to the gardens. Snacks and wine will be served on the way home. Send checks to Martha Stanley at 635 Country Manor Court, Decatur, area code 62521. The deadline to sign up is okay on Monday, July 18th. So you got to make up your mind now for a trip on August 16th. And for more information, contact Sharon Bullock at 217-864-1371. An open house to welcome Steve Miller as executive director of the Macon County Court-Appointed Special Advocates, known as CASA, will be held this afternoon from 3:30 to 6 at program offices located at 132 South Water Street, Suite 250. Miller started work in the position on Tuesday, July 5th. This is your opportunity to go show support for CASA, a wonderful program for young children in our area. And the Juvé Jazz Society will host the 2006 Mini Jazz Festival from 2 to 7 p.m. this Sunday, July 17th, at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel. A buffet dinner will begin at 4 p.m. A $35 donation is requested. Four jazz bands will be performing throughout the event, including Barb City Stompers, Prairie Dogs Western Spring Spin, Swing Swing, there we go, Swing Band, ragtime piano player Faye Ballard, and a cabaret show. Wow, this sounds like fun. For more information, call 217-877-4527. And finally, the Mattoon Arts Council is inviting entries for its first photography show themed My Hometown. Professionals, amateurs, and students in grades 6 through 12 are encouraged to submit original work in three categories: any subject in color, any subject in black and white, and any photograph in the hometown theme in color or black and white. Cash prizes will be awarded. Entry forms and fees are online at www.mattoonartscouncil, and that's all one word, mattoonartscouncil.org, and must be turned in by Friday, July 29th. The reception and show are set for Friday through Sunday, August 26th through 28th, in the historic train depot. For more information, call 217-258-6286. That looks like all the time we have today for news from the Decatur area for Thursday, July 14th. This has been Ruth McCauley reading with you. I've enjoyed it very much today. I hope you have as well. And I look forward to reading again with you next week. And until then, y'all take care.